Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on this Friday afternoon. And listen, I told you before that I felt like it was really important for the people of this audience, all you Right Side ruffians out there, to hear from some of your leaders, your elected officials, folks who are out there doing the job. We just had U.S. Senator Katie Britt on momentarily ago, and now we're going to bring on Alabama's Attorney General Steve Marshall. Steve Marshall has a long history as a prosecutor, served as the district attorney for the Marshall County in northeast Alabama for many years. Is in his second term now as the Attorney General for the great state of Alabama, is also, by the way, the immediate past chairman of the Republican Attorneys General Association nationwide. So without further ado, Mr. Attorney General Steve Marshall, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, and happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday. I mean, this has been some more kind of a week, but...
Yeah, for sure.
Let me ask you... You actually, not only as a prosecutor, you have a view, as a Republican, you have a view, but you also spent a day in that courtroom up in New York most recently. Give us your unvarnished thoughts about what has happened and what you saw and experienced and what your thoughts are on it.
Yeah, remarkable experience to be there, number one, to observe very specifically what not only we were hearing and reading about, but to be able to see it firsthand. And look, Philly, you've talked about it. I've been a prosecutor for 20-plus years, and I care desperately about the criminal justice system. I mean, for us to function in our society, we need to make sure that we can trust the institutions that make decisions relating to the liberty interest of the people that they serve. And, you know, one of the things that was so troublesome for me, not just relating specifically to President Trump, was, you know, when the state of New York wants to endorse a attorney general there, by the way, who ran in a campaign saying she was coming after Donald Trump, that you had a local DA who said, I'm running to be able to hold Donald Trump accountable. That's not the way prosecutors are supposed to work. And in fact, if you compare the experience in New York with the majority of the places in this country, it absolutely doesn't work that way. Is that a real prosecutor, somebody who has fidelity to the law, follows facts, not people. You don't investigate people, you investigate crimes that are reported. And that's what was taking place in New York. And one of the reasons why I wanted to be there is somebody who cares desperately about a criminal justice system, who believes in it fundamentally, is to be able to say, this is an abomination to what I have worked my professional career to be able to uphold. And then, Phil, you've been in front of judges. You understand this idea of a standard. Is the judge is supposed to avoid any appearance of bias whatsoever. And when you have a daughter that works for Democratic fundraisers that's fundraising based upon that trial, which is sending out fundraising memos relating to decisions that judges is making about Donald Trump's case, then that's no judge that ought to be involved in it. And so, again, when we see what's going on in New York, that's not a reflection of what our system's about, but it is clearly the system that was rigged to be able to convict Donald Trump, and that's what they did yesterday.
Well, they did. Let me ask you this. Can you go ahead, for the benefit of the audience, and explain where – I mean, right now we know the sentencing is tentatively scheduled for July 11th, which is mere days before the Republican convention, by the way.
Yeah, not a coincidence.
But do you see, is there appeal before sentencing? Is there a stay on sentencing because of appeal? And do you see incarceration? And where do you see this going? And then how do you see it impacting the ability of the president to be the president?
Yeah, well, I'll say the last question first. It's not going to impact his ability to be the president of the United States, and he will be. So let's make that clear to begin with. But I think procedurally, New York operates just like other states. Is the sentencing hearing is set. They will conduct that sentencing hearing, and this is a Class E felony in New York. I mean, the lowest level of the offenses. I don't think, by the way, it's at all ironic either that Michael Cohen is self-confessed to have committed a higher level offense by stealing money from the Trump Organization than the one that Donald Trump has now been convicted of. So let's acknowledge that to begin with. Do I anticipate or expect, based upon New York sentencing practices, that he would be given a prison sentence? No. But yet, this is a judge, obviously, that seemingly is not operating and treating Donald Trump under the norm. But yet, you know, is a city and a state that has embraced this idea of not punishing in a prison sentence nonviolent offenders, then this would be completely against the norm. So I don't anticipate that, but it's not as if somehow or another that Donald Trump's going to have to be in a jail cell for the Republican National Convention. He'll get an appeal bond. Now, I would expect that there will be motions for new trial that will be filed and be considered by the judge post-sentencing. And at that point in time, I have no doubt that this judge will deny those, although there are significantly valid grounds to be able to do so, and particularly the absolute obliteration of the concept of due process in this case. And then New York is very similar to Alabama, and there are two levels of appellate courts. Interestingly, they call their Supreme Court the first intermediate level, and they will take those claims there, and then to the extent that resolution is not obtained favorable to President Trump, then I'm sure they will take it up even higher. But, I mean, for so many reasons, this is a case that is due to be reversed. And in fact, you know, there is a concept in the law called reversed and rendered, which means that the court doesn't send it back just to be heard again and retried. It says there is no valid basis to be able to go forward. And particularly when a jury's charged to consider what made this a felony offense of concealing another crime, and yet that crime is never defined, the elements are not presented, and in fact, the jury, as all 12, don't have to agree on what they believe that same crime was, that is almost a de facto basis for this case to go away. And I feel very confident that if you have fair-minded judges. Now, remember, these judges in New York are appointed by the governor there, so it tells you a little bit about what you're getting. But even, you know, you even see when CNN commentators are surprised that this case ended up in the result that it did with the jury instructions that the judge gave the jury, then maybe reasonable minds will ultimately prevail.
So let me, and that's great to hear. Let me ask you two questions that I want to spend our next several minutes on. The first question is, is this a matter, because they're trying to tie it to a federal election issue, is this a matter that has any touch to the U.S. Supreme Court, a constitutional question for that matter, or anything about the actual conviction itself that you believe could get to SCOTUS? And then secondly, I'd really like you, before we run out of time, to talk to the audience, if you will, about how you feel about the judicial system as a whole. Is this a taint upon the entire system? Is it isolated to New York? Give us your thoughts on those things.
Yeah, let me deal with the last one first. And that is that I do want my conservative friends to not paint a broad brush with the criminal justice system as a result of what took place in New York City. That is not the norm, nor is it the way that I know the criminal justice system operates here in Alabama. And kind of going back fundamentally to what I talked about earlier, it is critically important for this republic to function effectively that we're able to trust the institutions that we hold dear. That includes our judiciary system and those that are involved with it, particularly the prosecutors. You know, I can tell you that as somebody that has spent a majority of his life in courtrooms as an advocate for justice, it is incumbent upon a prosecutor to also recognize those cases need to be prosecuted and those which, in fact, don't need to move forward. And never within the decision I make to either prosecute or not prosecute should political ramifications be in play. And also, nor should there be political vendettas to be able to pursue. And I am still confident that we have the greatest judicial system in the world, that America is a leader in all of the nations and how it is that we administer justice. And while I would think that folks in China and Russia are laughing right now about what took place in New York City, that's not reflective of who we are or what our system is about. And so I hope that we can be able to maintain that. Frankly, it's one of the reasons why the president's argument around presidential immunity is so critical, because although it wouldn't have applied in a case like this, you know, it ensures that administrations can't come after the prior president for political reasons, and this just demonstrates why the president needs that protection. But, you know, I think, Phil, there are potentially multiple issues that could make its way to the Supreme Court, but particularly around what the jury decided. There's a line of cases coming from the United States Supreme Court about what juries have to specifically find for purposes of a criminal prosecution and conviction. They call it Apprendi is one of the cases that's cited, where juries have to have very specific guidance and have to give also very specific feedback to the court about what they've done. And I think there's a clear Apprendi issue that exists in this case and one that would be ripe for Supreme Court review.
Well, more to come on that one, I guess. And the reality is, I know that the court, especially the Supremes, they're loath to get involved in an ongoing matter related to, you know, a political campaign. But, you know, we've seen Bush v. Gore and others where the courts had to actually intervene or take action or resolve a question that impacted the ballot because time was of the essence and they knew that was the only way to resolve an ongoing controversy. Mr. Attorney General, listen, I appreciate your time, and this is a thing that's going to unfold over time, so we may reach out to you again. But in the meantime, thanks for finding time for Right Side today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Phil. Take care.
All right, take care. All right, we will take a break right now. Good to hear somebody who's got that kind of position. I mean, he's the immediate past chairman of the Republican Attorneys General nationwide, and you just heard him say, this is not an indictment on the entire system. This is an indictment on that courthouse. I think that's a key piece. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.